You are listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
It is a story time with Sarah Day.
Aww.
What story are you going to tell us today, Sarah?
This is one of my new favorite ladies. I have a long list of favorite ladies at this point in the podcast, so I'm just going to add another one to the list of ladies. It is Women's History Month, and we're actually recording this episode on International Women's Day, which was not... That was not on purpose, but...
Okay.
The lady that I'm telling you a story about today actually had her own Google Doodle back on March 23rd of 2023 because she promoted women's health way before it was cool, so... This lady is awesome in my book.
Okay.
It is the story of Justine Siegmund. She was a Silesian midwife way back in the 17th century.
Wow.
So we've talked about women doctors before with Dr. Bessie, but she was a little bit later, quite a bit later, actually. And Justine Siegmund is basically her forerunner in midwifery and obstetrics. And she was most likely Lutheran, which is the coolest part of this. So Justine Siegmund was born Justine Dietrich on December 26, 1636. Yes, that is during the 30 Years' War. In Rostock, now Rostocka, Poland, in Lower Silesia. And her dad was Elias Dietrich, who was a Lutheran minister. So most likely she was also Lutheran.
That seems very, very likely.
Very plausible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He died in 1650 when she was only 14, which is a sad story. There was a long history of Lutheranism in Silesia, though, and we also have a Silesian partner church with missionaries serving in that area. So the legacy of Lutheranism in that area is still going strong.
I'll just add, they aren't actually a partner church.
We have Lutherans in Silesia.
Yes. There are partners that we are working with, absolutely. But
there we go.
I do not believe we are actually in
altar pulpit fellowship with them. I didn't fact check that in my notes.
That's okay.
We have fellow brothers and sisters in Christ.
Yes.
Also Lutheran. In 1655, at the age of 19, Justine married Christian Siegmund, who was an accountant. So that's cool. They never had children, though, in their 42 years of marriage. The year after she was married, when she was 20.
That's a long marriage. She lived a long life.
She lived a long life.
Like for that, that time, like.
She died in like her 60s, I think.
He lived a long time.
Yeah.
Like to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. Yeah.
Well, apparently when you take care of women's health, sometimes your longevity goes up.
Funny story.
Also, they never had children, so she couldn't die in childbirth. So.
Right. Also true. Interesting. Okay.
So when she was 20, speaking of childbirth, Justine suffered from an undiagnosed prolapsed uterus.
Oh,
wow.
Very not fun. Her ill-informed midwives misdiagnosed it as a pregnancy, which it was not.
Oof. That's almost as bad as when, like, Queen Mary in England had a stomach tumor and they thought she was pregnant until she wasn't. But prolapsed uterus, just as heartbreaking.
Not fun. I mean, this is bad enough with our modern medicine these days, but can you imagine this with, like, 17th century medicine? Really not fun. So this was the experience that made her want to study obstetrics, very understandably. I think it would also make me want to study obstetrics. And so she went through an apprenticeship and then she started her own practice in 1659. And she was asked to help in the case of an obstructed labor because a baby's arm was in the wrong place. I may want to trigger warning this episode at this point. We will talk about some pregnancy complications. And I know so for some people, this may be a little triggering if these issues have happened to you. So if that's the case, feel free to skip to the next episode. I totally understand. But it's very interesting how she dealt with some of these issues and put a lot of hope back into women's lives. So So she provided these free midwifery services to poor women in her local area until 1670, which was very cool, given back to the people around her. And then her paying client base grew with the likes of noble and merchant families. So word was spreading very quickly that she was super capable of handling difficult births and guiding women through childbirth, which at this time, I mean, still today, but especially back in the day, childbirth was pretty dangerous for a lot of women. So she was like becoming a rock star among women, especially the noble women who started calling on her. In 1670, she was named City Midwife of Legnica or Lignitz. This was a thing. They had city midwives because she was becoming so well known for her expertise and had this thriving practice. Louise, the Duchess of Legnica, called on her when she was suffering from a life-threatening cervical tumor, which Justine successfully removed after the men had been called on previously and couldn't do it. So she was a successful, like becoming very successful at really challenging medical situations. She did get a little bit mansplained, though. In 1670, her former supervisor, Martin Kerger, accused her of having unsafe birthing practices. But his medical faculty colleagues at Frankfurt-on-Oder said, "No, you're definitely wrong. And Justine is actually doing things quite properly." So his own statement showed like how little he knew about female reproductive and infant anatomies and childbirth. And she actually was the expert in that situation. And he totally got shut down. So that little incident didn't really affect her professional practice or people's trust in her, though. Frederick William, Elector of Brandenburg, we've talked about electors before and how like very important these people are. He caught wind of her and appointed her as his court midwife in Berlin in 1680.
So they have city midwives and also court midwives?
Yes, they did.
They really took midwifery seriously.
They did.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't just lady troubles. I guess it was, but they realized it was a specialty field that required...
the whole population.
Yes. Special.
Childbirth is important.
Yeah.
So she was, at some point during this time, she was in the Netherlands, and it said that Mary II of Orange suggested to Justine that she should write a training manual for midwives, since she obviously knew what she was doing and was doing it very well. And so at this point, Justine may have already been writing things down, but up until this point in history, midwifery and the practices were generally passed down verbally, and there really wasn't any standardized documentation for safe practices. And at this point, men were the only ones writing medical texts. There was no medical text for childbirth, midwifery, anything written by a woman. So in 1689, she went from The Hague to Frankfurt-on-Oder, and she submitted her draft manual to the medical faculty there, and they approved it. To make it even more practical, she had included embryological and anatomical engravings from Regnier de Graaf, who is a Dutch physician, physiologist, and anatomist, who made these really key discoveries in reproductive biology, and Govard Bidlou, a Dutch physician, anatomist, poet, and playwright, and personal physician of William III of Orange Nassau. So it's, you can see some of these things if you Google this online. You can see some of these engravings that she included in the books.
Hang on, I'll be right back.
They're really interesting. It's really cool to see that the drawings that they were making at this point that they were including in the book. So during the spring and summer of 1689, she gained printing privileges from the electors of Brandenburg and Saxony, and even the Holy Roman Emperor. So like these are very important people that are giving her these printing privileges. And this would have protected her intellectual property rights. And she did this at her own expense. So she was paying for all of this on her own to have this printed. Would not have been cheap.
Wow.
Wow. These pictures are really cool, but
aren't they?
Yeah. Not maybe for the faint of heart.
Also that.
I mean, medical textbooks and whatnot.
Right. Mm-hmm. But like in the mid to late 1600s, they were having...
Yeah, this would be super helpful.
Very intricate medical drawings for obstetrics. Super cool. In 1690, she published the authoritative obstetrical text, The Court Midwife. And I am not even going to attempt the German on this one. I'm generally very brave with German, but this one is a little beyond what I'm going to say. it translates to the court midwife of the electorate of Brandenburg. This was the first German medical text written by a woman. Kind of a big deal. Hmm. On March 28th, 1690, the European University Viadrina Frankfurt on Oder certified her book as an official medical textbook, which was a huge accomplishment for her. It's written as this, I kind of want to read this now. It sounds really cool. It's written as this dialogue between her and her student, Christina. It's a systemic and evidence-based book of reproductive health and childbirth, including how to manage complications in birth, like poor presentations, umbilical cord issues, and placenta previa. And a significant issue that she covers was shoulder presentation, which means that instead of the head or the feet leading the baby out of the birth canal, the shoulder or torso leads the way. And this basically, like, the baby is trying to come out sideways. Mm-hmm. Not good.
No. You can't do it.
No. Right. No. So this
physically
is
physically impossible.
Very catastrophic situation. In these days, usually the baby wouldn't survive. Mm. Many times the mother may not either. Mm-hmm. So this is like big deal, right? But Justine figured out a two-handed intervention to rotate the baby in the uterus using a sling to secure a limb. So you could actually rotate the baby before trying to birth and it would survive. And so with the mom.
Wow.
This was huge. She likely saved a whole lot of lives figuring this out. She and French obstetrician François Morisseau figured out how to deal with a hemorrhaging placenta previa by puncturing the amniotic sac and like fixing that problem also. So these are some really big developments in women's health and obstetrics. Save women's lives, basically. Hmm. She's like midwife superhero in my book. Very cool. And the royals loved her.
Uh-huh.
Understandably. She was also midwife for Frederick I's sister, Marie Amelie, Duchess of Saxony-Zeit, and delivered four of her children. And then in 1696, at the court of August the Strong, she helped Saxon Electress Eberhardine. I can't say her name. With the birth of her son, Frederick Augustus II. And while she was at it, she was also helping with the births of a lot of babies around Berlin as well. And then once again, another male doctor, Andreas Petermann in Leipzig, tried to charge her with the same things that Martin Kerger had tried earlier, but he was also inexperienced and didn't really know what he was talking about. And Justine won out against his accusations as well.
Hmm.
Justine also rarely used instruments or pharmaceuticals in her practice, which is a very interesting thing that she did a lot of this like unmedicated as well. Mm-hmm. According to the deacon who did her funeral in 1705, she had delivered almost 6,200 infants, which is crazy.
That's
and very cool.
A lot of babies.
It is a lot of babies.
So did she do primarily just physical manipulation then?
I think so. That's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing looking at the pictures and, you know, the strategies she used for like turning babies and stuff. She must have had very dainty hands, which I think would have come in handy for a midwife and might be why women were so much better at that than most men.
Yeah. I was thinking about that too, how that would
the things you think about.
Yeah. Justine died in Berlin on November 10th, 1705 at the age of 68, which, as we've mentioned, seems like a very long, long life for someone at this time. After her death, her book, The Court Midwife, went through a ton of republications, once in Berlin, twice in Leipzig, with modifications, including some corroborating male gynecological evidence, and then four additional republications, also including notes about the accusations from Kerger and Petermann.
Hmm.
And that's all we know. So this is a very short episode because there's not a lot of other information about her. But what we do know is really, really interesting to know. And I kind of love how she took this really horrible personal experience and used it to help so many other women and children, like literally thousands of moms and babies during her time. And it's super validating for me on a very personal level that a woman who never had children had such an immense impact on the lives mm-hmm. of mothers and children. I keep coming back to like vocation and talking about vocation and using the talents and interests that God gives us to serve other people. And Justine absolutely did that and gives me some motivation to keep doing what I'm doing as well. So that's all we know about her. But I think her story is pretty cool. And I think we should all know about it.
That is.
So do we know what her, I don't remember, what did her husband do?
He was an accountant.
Oh, that's right. He was an accountant. So
he was
just able to go and work if like wherever he was, he'd be able to set up and work there. So therefore he was able to follow her around in her career, I assume.
Most likely, yeah.
I imagine that an accountant would be a pretty useful husband to have if you had your own medical practice. Mm-hmm. I think those two go together, billing and care. I did the math on this. So she had a 46-year career with, you said, 6,200 babies.
Yeah.
That is 135 babies a year.
Wow.
Or like one every 3 days for almost 50 years.
Mm-hmm. That's busy.
And if you think about like, you know, any prenatal and postnatal care, she was a workaholic. Like that's like, take weekends off. No.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Babies don't take weekends off either.
No, they absolutely do not.
So there's some other links and things that I can throw in the show notes as well. If you want to read a snippet more, there really isn't a lot other stuff out there unless you want to read her actual book, which you can probably find in a corner of the internet. There are some like journal articles about her and some stuff in non-English sources as well that obviously I couldn't really read. There's a few other interesting articles and things from museums and things you can look into her history a little bit more and just like some of the royals that she served and stuff.
Yeah, I really love this story. When you said first off that she was a pioneer in women's health, my first thought was ruh-roh, because of course in our world today, women's health doesn't necessarily mean delivering live babies.
No, it doesn't.
So it's really nice to see sort of a return to form in her life as someone who really loved women and was committed to preserving these tiny infant lives.
Yeah.
By just simple common sense, evidence-based methods that didn't require a whole lot of bells and whistles and machinery and tools and drugs and all that. Just simple, know what you're doing, a lot of experience, and the outcomes can be very good for both mother and child. It's a wonderful example, I think, to all of us today that this is even possible and worth pursuing.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you can buy it online. I just looked it up. I guess I could have looked it up before we started recording, but you can find a PDF online if you really, really feel like
it. In English?
It looks like it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What happens if I click buy the book?
I have a cousin who is a midwife.
Oh.
And has set up her practice here in St. Louis. And there is apparently a great demand for midwifery as an approach to childbirth, as opposed to what has been the more traditional way, but really midwifery sort of precedes the traditional way of sort of getting back to that again. Her practice has been so successful that she's actually been able to expand, and they've hired an additional, I think they might now have 3 midwives practicing at that location.
That's awesome.
Because it's just a lot. And indeed, when you were saying like how many babies she's, I'm always struck by it. She's like, we had 4 babies this weekend.
And yeah,
there's just a lot of babies being born, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I know midwife centers seem to be, I don't know if it's a generational thing and millennial moms are just like, I'm going to go to a midwife. But I know a lot of my friends that have had babies recently have all chosen midwife centers. Not that there's anything wrong with the traditional, traditional with going labor and delivery at a hospital. Nothing wrong with that. But I know a lot of my friends have chosen the midwife centers over that, just for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some it's of them, nice. In fact, she is linked with the hospital, so if there is additional intervention needed, it's a very seamless sort of transition from one type of care to another.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. It's just a lot more personal, I think, too, mm-hmm. for a lot of women to have a little bit more one-on-one care. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cool stuff happening with midwifery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it is. And it's an advanced practice
yeah.
role, meaning it's not a medical doctor, but it's definitely an advanced degree.
Mm-hmm.
Its own degree, but it's a category within nursing that requires considerable additional training and education.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Cool that it's making a comeback.
I think so.
I think it's great for mothers to have this option.
Because mm-hmm. Let's be honest, childbirth can still be pretty scary mm-hmm. for a lot of reasons. So,
I mean, just consider the physics involved and it's terrifying, actually. I say this as someone who did it 4 times, but I still can't quite wrap my mind around uh-huh. how it even works.
Right.
Yeah.
But Justine Sigelman could.
Uh-huh.
And she was great at it.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, I hope you enjoyed this nice short little story about Justine Sigelman and her amazing midwifery practices, breaking some barriers, breaking a few glass ceilings as well. And we'll share some links in the show notes and her Google Doodle as well. It's a really cute one. I love it. We'll share that also in there so you can see how Google chose to recognize her on March 23rd of 2023. We'd love to hear your thoughts about her story or midwifery in general. I don't know. You can share whatever you'd like to in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Facebook. You can also share your thoughts on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can find all of our podcasts at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel. Gonna get up off my story time mat now. That was more like a picture book, but
it was a picture book
story time. I have pictures.
I should make a picture book for her.
An idea.
Oh, I'm gonna
be
do
very
it.
Cool.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give.